正秀啊。
This is Tractor Tuesday Live, hosted by sixth generation Nebraska farmer and Tractor Tuesday founder Zach Bosley and Scott Anderson, owner of New Age Ag Supply. Join them each week as they sit down with farmers, innovators, dealers, and creators who are enhancing the culture within agriculture, right here on Tractor Tuesday Live.
Hey, I guess two takes is what it takes at Tractor Tuesday. Zach Bosley here at Tractor Tuesday. We're really live. A lot of times we just pretend, Scott, but Scott Anderson, New Age Ag Supply, joining me apparently from a Sprinter van. I think we've deciphered it's not bulletproof. So feel free to take a shot at him at any given moment if you can find him. But Scott, how you doing out in California?
I'm doing good, man. Just picked my parents up from the airport. So
just got them back
and we're going to... We got a Starlink on top of the van here. Once you hit your fifth kid, you kind of run out of space in a regular SUV, so you got to get extended.
I've got some friends here in town, and I believe this is awesome. So the youngest brother, they had their seventh child, and he's probably about 30. The oldest is older than me, he's about 45. He and his wife just had their seventh child, and more of my friend, the one in the middle, I think he's only got three kids, but you know, between all of that side of the family, man, holy cow, they've got a lot of really cool kids running around my county, thankfully. But today I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of these end of the year auctions. You know, at Tractor Tuesday, we decided to punt. We had quite a few listings of farmer owned equipment that they were open to go on the end of the year. In years past, I would have been a little bit more aggressive to push their units out on the end of the year. This year, I honestly didn't have the confidence. And of the majority of this group of about six dozen folks, pretty much all of them but two said they and their bankers were totally fine waiting until February. To be honest with you, the other guys that had some units, I think they were pretty upside down on them. And you know, if it's not lien free, we've got to have that open dialogue with the lender. And I just don't think it would have checked out. But, you know, not saying that these end of the year auctions have been a dud. I mean, honestly, the ones the past week or so, they've been performing relatively strong. Like you noted, Scott, you reached out and showed me a few units. A year like this, I feel like it was better to go earlier in the month. And what I'm hoping for personally, not that I really need any upgrades, but I'm definitely going to be watching because, you know, if there's a producer that rolled some income or some profit into this 25 calendar year, maybe from a 24, insurance situation or anything that may have happened, I'd be a little leery on December 30th for some of these units, you know, because if you really needed a write-off and you're that close to the buzzer, you know, I'd probably just buy dry fertilizer. I mean, honestly, what would be your go-to if you were in a crunch and hunting a write-off?
Well, I mean, you shouldn't be hunting write-offs. You should just be managing your income. And farmers have so many options to do that. Just deferring your income from your grain sales to January 1st would be everybody knows that game. So that would be the best thing. Obviously, prepaying inputs, you're going to get the better price. Like most of the, I have a seed company also. So most of the biggest discounts, 10 or 12% discounts off of the retail value on a bag of seed is going to happen in, you know, August and September timeframe. It's crazy that we buy our seed before we even harvest last year's crop, or we at least put our order in, you know, and that's all financed at 0% with name your, you know, JDF or something. But yeah, inputs is definitely one thing. You can prepay your taxes for the next year on your land. You know, you can buy all your licensing for your vehicles. That's one thing that we kind of spend all the money that we can before the end of the year. You can donate to foundations. The IRS, actually the call before this call was with my tax strategist, and he said the IRS just completely changed the rules on how a regular corporation can make donations. Or a regular LLC or whatever your business structure is. And so you can And this is a long, long conversation. We'll have to interview him or something.
Yeah,
but you definitely can actually donate. You can deduct about, with different strategies, about 50% of your taxable income and put it in your own private foundation. And your own private foundation has a whole set of different rules on how you can manage the money that's in there. So there's donations, to just sum it up in 2 seconds rather than a 2 hour conversation.
Oh, for sure. And I'm assuming that's just only based off of income. You couldn't have something, you know, like, I don't know, just on a different schedule, just major capital gains or anything. You probably couldn't defer or get around that, could you?
Yes, you could.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I'm no tax expert. And this is the problem, Scott. I don't make any money. So what am I supposed to do? You know, and it's just, if it wasn't for my business type stuff, I mean, I've farmed as an adult, you know, basically off my dad's coattails for about 12 seasons now. I think I've actually been profitable about 3 of those years. You know, so for me, if it wasn't for the other forms of income, I've never only had a farm income. For better or worse, oil and gas, and then the auction stuff. So it's kind of hard for me to really wrap my brain around some of these advanced strategies. So definitely a good idea for another show. We can definitely get a gentleman like that on and see what we can really decipher with him. But, you know, today more so on the farm machinery. God, I mean, there were some phenomenal results. But of course, it's usually the pre-def type units. And you're seeing that from semi tractors. I saw like an 07 Peterbilt machine Pete was talking about. I think it had like 20,000 miles on it. The last bit I saw was 209,000. And you go back and you think about what was the MSRP on that when it was released. I'd be shocked it was even 160 back then. You know, and so these units are doing quite strong for obvious reasons. You know, a lot of the nearly new, you know, class 8 combines, some of the off-lease units, I mean, they're all over the place. I think it's more so the location of the machinery, the quality of the listing, you know, what type of service records were available. It can really be a big disaster if you step into the wrong combine. I'm sure a lot of guys know that firsthand, but you can have $30,000 and maybe not even scratch 3/4 of all the known issues, you know, on a big class 8 combine that's been beat up. So, you know, the idea is today is more so what should these potential bidders and buyers, what should their strategy be? And there's just a lot of things going on, but outside of the trains behind me here, it's a good time to be on the live stream. Okay, here we go. So here's a question. I'm not sure if it's coming from the conductor of this train blaring the horn at me to get the attention, but what are some of the measures to ensure a safe outcome when bidding on equipment sight unseen? And I actually kind of was touching on that before we reset the live stream, you know, and it can be as simple as just a Google search with a serial number, reaching out to that dealership. If you've got a better relationship than I do with my local dealers, you could always reach out with them, see if they know anything based off that serial number. But you'd be surprised. I mean, in years past, I've Googled units. I've seen that, hey, that same tractor sold 3 years before and the hours were actually higher than they were selling today. You know, I mean, you can find some really wonky stuff. So as a buyer, do your due diligence, protect yourself, reach out, ask as many questions as you can. But of course, what usually happens is, you know, your dad calls you, hey, Zach, there's 5 minutes left on this auction. Can you believe what the 770 is bringing? And you're just scrambling to try to figure out and put some pieces together. So I think, and don't be in a rush. If you're rushing to figure out your login and make a bid, you know, if it's not on Tractor Tuesday where we provide that type of detail, you know, maybe consider just punting on clicking that button because you might really regret it. Scott, you got any other ideas?
Yeah, the first thing you have to protect yourself from is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you get on auctions, even if you're not on a live in-person auction, you're just bidding on your phone or your computer, you have to protect yourself from yourself. Overpaying on these assets is so easy to do when you get click happy on that button, and you have to do your due diligence. If somebody texts you last minute and says, hey, this is what's happening, you know, you can't get FOMO, fear of missing out. You have to actually say, hey, I'm gonna let this one go. There's always another deal down the road. So you just have to make sure that you don't shoot yourself in the foot. You have to do your due diligence. You have to call the number on the auction. And if you can't, if it's a brokered auction, meaning that it's being sold by somebody who's not the owner, then you've got to get the contact information of the owner. Like even on everything you can, the more information, the better. And chances are a lot of times the other parties aren't doing that due diligence, which is actually, if you have insider information, you know that it's a bad investment, you know? And you have, you, it's not like you can't get punished for having too much information. You only benefit from having too much information when it comes to buying these assets. So,
No, I agree. And it's just, it's a tricky thing. Okay. Here's another one. What's the biggest mistake you see buyers make during holiday auctions? And I think a lot of that is, you know, a little bit of what we alluded to. Yeah, Scott, I think you got muted here because you might have froze up a little bit. But, you know, just again, it's kind of back to that same question. You know, a lot of the biggest mistakes are they just they feel like they're under the gun. The whole FOMO kicks in. They're already mentally invested in owning that unit. It's a psychological battle, and it's just it's exciting. But this is a great perspective that I got from my dad. And it's just his favorite thing about an auction is being the second to last bidder. Because then you get all the thrill, you get to kind of ride the thing up. And then when you don't win, you don't have to pay for it. So, I mean, it's just there's guys out there like that. And I know a few other dealers that they just will not let something sell too cheap. If it sells too cheap, well, they know the margins. They'll just throw it on their lot and they'll be happy with purchasing. You know, really the internet only allows you to give away something once. And that's really about it. And that's the cool thing. You don't have to be this established. We've been in the game for 25 years. We've got a million registered users. More than half are probably deceased. It doesn't matter. If you have a serial number out there, you could have 50 people signed up for that auction and it's going to bring what it deserves.
Yeah, I was going to say something like along those lines. Everything that's on an auction is protected. Even if it says there's no reserve, whatever. The auctioneers, and I had a big auction last year, sold $4 million worth of farm machinery on auction last year. Late model stuff. That was amongst, I had like 12 things for sale and it was roughly $4 million worth of assets. Nice late model stuff. Yeah. And the dealer, I told the guy, I said, hey man, the morning of the auction, I was like, we got to come up $1 million or... I'm gonna I don't know what to tell you. We got to come up $1 million. I'm not gonna be off the loan, the line on this stuff, the loan. And he said, okay. He said, well, let me know. He said, what pieces you need to buy back? And he said, we're not in the business of giving away your farm machinery, you know, because the auction houses, if they consistently get crappy prices for farm machinery, they're not gonna be in business anymore. So. It's either the seller is re-owning that asset or, you know, the market's bidding it up. And I think what you're seeing today versus last year, there was so much volume. I mean, insane volume last year. Yeah. Like every day there was a dealership having a huge auction that was $5 million to $10 million. This fall, there's been little, light auction volumes. I mean... Mm-hmm. 1 week last year would have done more than we've seen in the last 30 days.
Yeah. So. And I think that's correct. And I think you're going to see, just like the Tractor Tuesday strategy, there's going to be a lot of pre-March auctions. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these categories bleed deeper into March, like self-propelled sprayers. I think, you know, a lot of guys have just been told, just leave it in the shed. You know, and thankfully enough producers that potentially need to minimize some of their inventory, they can wait. And I guess the cool thing is about the banking side of things, it just seems like a lot more of these ag lenders are a little bit more understanding. I mean, it's just been an absolute bloodbath the past three seasons. You've got a little bit of equity in your land, hopefully. Hopefully, if your balance sheets are a little top-end heavy and you might need to balance that out a little bit, you've got a lender that understands, you know, and I think they're willing to work with you as long as you communicate. And that's the biggest thing that really ties this all back in together. Look into as much as you can, you know, communicate with the auctioneer, see if you can get a previous owner on the phone, get as much detail as you can. And a lot of times it scares me, but you know, it's a risk. And when you're throwing, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars around and you're a small operator like myself, I mean, that can be a huge mistake if you buy the wrong piece. So dig into it as deep as you can. And I think that's really a good first step. And it's really nothing that groundbreaking. We're not sharing any industry secrets, but yeah, get on AI. I use Grok quite a bit. You know, I know ChatGPT is quite popular, Claude, you know, there's a lot of different options. Put those serial numbers in, make sure, because half the time the listing quality is so bad on these online auctions. You know, and like you said, you're selling a $250,000 unit and you've got seven blurry pictures where you see some big shadow in the background, or the guy's got his thumb, you know, on the side of the lens. And it's like, you know, I mean, what are you supposed to do with all that? So dig into it. And if you're hunting a deal, honestly, look for the worst quality listing you can find. The more information they omit from that listing, the more of an opportunity it could be for you as a savvy buyer just to visually decipher how that build probably is. And maybe your dealer can give you that insight. But yeah, go ahead, Scott. I'm kind of cutting you off here.
Well, on some of the auctions that aren't mostly farm equipment, like if you go to Steffes, you know, Ritchie Brothers, Auction Time, they're more than Big Iron. They're going to, and you guys, obviously, Tractor Tuesday, they're going to know that that equipment's real. I've actually won. I buy and sell a lot of different stuff, not just tractors, but motorcycles and sports cars and stuff like that. It's a great way to get a sports car is to buy it, have your fun, and then sell it for a profit.
Which, no, I mean, it can happen. If you know what the prices are and what the margins are, yeah, you can absolutely do that. And, you know, and I've witnessed and somewhat have experienced that firsthand. And my problem is when you buy something cool that's old, I think I got like an 85 or 86 C10 Chevy. And man, that thing was awesome. I hopped in it. You know, it smelled like the 80s. Everything was great. But then about 5 minutes into it, I thought, oh man, I just want to get in my new truck and leave this thing behind. I'm not sure if that's coming in, but I had like a robot talking to me there. I'm not sure what's going on. That's the fun with must be like a –
it was the voice Mercedes text. Car trying to talk to me. I don't know what I said.
Okay.
It didn't like it. It might work for Auction Time. I don't know.
I think this is a question, this looks like this came in off of Facebook too. It's asking, if you can't see it, are private sellers or dealers more motivated at year end? I think generally speaking, it's more so the private sellers, because these larger dealership groups, you know, John Deere, for example, their fiscal year, to my knowledge, and I could be mistaken, ends the end of October. You know, so you're likely to see those guys get a little bit more aggressive with their inventory reduction in the months leading up to their fiscal year wrapping up. You know, the individual farmers, you know, like this year, I mean, in theory, if there was enough buyers out there, I know I'm losing my ass on my corn crop that I had. You know, it really wouldn't have hurt if I could have brought in some extra income if I had a unit that I could have gotten rid of. So I think, yeah, to me, it's got to be the individual farmers. Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, exactly. It all depends on when your year end is, you know, because the dealer's fiscal year end is usually, like you said, in October in that time frame. And I know a lot of farmers who moved their fiscal year end to like March 31st instead of January 1st to give them more time so that they're not right through harvest and then have to get right into books and tax management and all that stuff. So it depends on when the fiscal year end is. If you get, I don't know if where, what point they would be more motivated. Anybody who has something to sell is motivated. Otherwise they wouldn't be selling it.
Right.
You know, especially when it comes to farm machinery. So there's always room. I've maybe sold 5% of my assets at my actual asking price.
Okay.
You know, everything you give something away, whether it's the trucking or whether it's it's something. So if it's for sale, they want to move it. Otherwise they wouldn't have wasted time doing. It's a lot of work to put an asset for sale. The pictures, the building, the listings, the descriptions, you know, like all the back end work that get into putting an asset for sale. So if it's for sale, they're motivated. It doesn't matter. Okay. You got room to go.
Okay. This is Jay Landell. It's my guy here. He goes, what do the 80s smell like? You know, and maybe somebody with his advanced age, he might have a better memory of that. To me, it just kind of smells, oh, I don't know, kind of like vinyl. I just pleather maybe with a hint of a Winston cigarette, you know, in the background. Not necessarily moldy. I think the moldy smells more of the 70s, but, you know, I'm kind of an 80s baby, so I remember seeing, you know, some of these things, but to me, that's what the 80s smelled like. And God dang, your car's talking again. Yeah, we got Scott. He's got to check with his robot here. Here's another good question off of Facebook. From your experience, are most farmers honest about the condition of their equipment? I'd say yes. Overwhelmingly, yes. About 90% of the farmers, I would say, have been very straight shooters. You know, it's just the ones that might come up from a certain region and drop off the tractor at 2 a.m. You know, that's a different group. And the joke is, in Nebraska, no offense to my cowboy buddies, most of them can probably really whoop my ass, but the joke is, the larger the hat, the worse the service. But I do feel like in the row crop areas, the majority of farmers, you know, at least through the Corn Belt and the Plain States, they really do a good job. And again, it's about the quality of the listing. You know, don't buy something sight unseen without a lot of detail. You know, and really in this technology realm that we're all living in right now, how hard is it to click a mouse, you know, and upload some service records? You know, I mean, seriously, anybody can get it, get that information, get it on the listing, you know, and this could be a lot about the, you know, the potential buyers and bidders here, but a lot of it falls on the individual equipment owners. And that's the cool thing about Tractor Tuesday. We're holding these equipment owners to a little bit higher of a standard, and that's why they list with us. And we'll have to start summarizing what daily deals on a retail marketplace we're getting sold, but the units that are selling, they're just priced correctly. You know, and I think the expectations of the seller is, you know, it's right there with everything, you know, and it's, if you have a hunch and you're bidding on something, oh, this guy's protecting it. I mean, maybe, you know, and it's just, sometimes there's been units in the past that I've been bidding on that, oh, it's gotta be the owner protecting the dang thing. And you look into it and it really wasn't the case. It was just me, you know, and my inner demons just being upset that I couldn't win the auction. You know, so the expectations of what's going on, but generally speaking, the average row crop farmer that I know, you know, and the equipment that sells, it's usually a pretty simple process. And at least on, I would call them maybe the big three, you know, Auction Time, Big Iron, Steffes, Adam Marshall does some awesome auctions too. Generally speaking, every unit that's gone through has been on the up and up. You hear horror stories, but, you know, again, buyer beware. You know, you're buying sight unseen. It's an auction. Yeah, you could get dumped with something with a major problem, but research that unit, research that make and model. Something we always talk about, hey, the 11 to 15 Magnums, there's a good chance they've got a major issue and that short block needed to be replaced. Look into it. Get an oil sample. And what does that cost? $50? You know, and it's just, it's really more so not only on the farmer, but if they're not their own auctioneer and they're not selling it themselves on Tractor Tuesday, they're utilizing somebody else's service. It's really on that auctioneer to represent it and really paint the full picture. Get oil samples, get service records. But yeah, Scott, sorry, I'm kind of just railroading the conversation here. But yeah, any other ideas or thoughts? Maybe not on the smell of the 80s, but the quality of the listings.
Yeah, I would say that farmers are honest if you ask them pointed questions. They're not going to volunteer information unless it's major information, right? So if you're going to buy an 8R310 that's 15 years old and it's got 3,500 hours on it, you need to know what the pitfalls were with those. Did they have an engine issue? Was there a transmission issue in those ones? Is it IVT or, you know, ILS? What's the issues that's common? Did it have that issue? Has it had all the PIPs, product improvement stuff? Like, farmers are going to tell you if you ask them, but they're not going to volunteer information unless it was in a fire, right? If it's a cab combine and it was in a fire, they'll probably tell you that, because that's like really need to know information. Or if it's got a salvage title, if it's a titled assets, that's pretty much information they have to disclose. I mean, you can't go buy a Corvette and then show up and the guy gives you a salvage title. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, like, Yeah. I'm not buying this thing with a salvage title. So you have to ask questions. So you have to do a little bit of due diligence to know which kind of questions to ask. What are the common issues with this make your model tractor? You can use AI as the best place to go for that, ChatGPT or Grok or whatever your source of AI is, because that's going to scrape all the forums and stuff. Otherwise, you spend all day reading, you know, through the forums trying to figure out what these farmers are talking about with this tractor is the same model. So yeah, you gotta ask really pointed questions, because farmers aren't gonna volunteer, you know. And I've had farmers come out to my yard looking at tractors, and they're like, "Oh, the bucket on your loader tractor is a little bit bent," or you know, they'll find stuff.
Oh yeah,
that I didn't even know. I'm like, I looked at the bucket, and I'm like, you know what? It is like maybe a half inch lower in the center than the edges, and I'm like, man, that guy has He's got pretty tight eyes to see that. I mean, you can tell that the tine on the grapple is a little bit bent, obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, the pictures will even show that, but you can't tell that the bucket has a small bend in it somehow or whatever. But yeah, I mean, ask very, very pointed questions. Here's another one.
Yeah, apparently we got a lot of soccer moms in our audience here. We're getting a lot of Facebook requests, but is the end of the year actually a better time to buy equipment, or is that mostly a myth? And I mean, it's so contingent, you know, year in, year out. Things are really different. I always joke with folks, you know, on combines in particular, there's never really a perfect time to sell a combine. The only great time to sell a combine and get top dollar is when somebody's burns down in the field and you've got that same make and model available on your site. Maybe the second best time to sell a combine is the end of the year on a stronger year for producers. Again, God, they mass produced Class A combines. You can go on the big marketplace online, and all reality, they've got 11, 1200, 780 combines. And then you look, you know, they've got maybe 90, 760 combines, just for example. And you'd never, outside of the ag industry, you could never wrap your mind around, well, why would a bigger machine with more horsepower sell for less than a smaller machine? And it's just, I don't know. It's not necessarily a myth. It's just very temperamental. And I think we're just in a very volatile time right now. And again, that's why I'm going to be a bidder. I'm going to be paying attention, because if there's a deal out there, I'm going to try to buy that deal, you know, but again, I'm going to do my due diligence and my research.
Yeah. To answer that question, generally, no, I would not. If I'm trying to get a good deal, I would generally wait until summer. The auctions that were happening in August and July and September and October this year were way, way better pricing, but there was very little volume. You know, auctions, machinery sales is a commodity game too, supply and demand. When there's very little supply on the market, meaning there's not a lot of auctions or there's not a lot of the stuff you want to buy on auction, then I wouldn't buy it. But if you're looking for an S780 combine and there's an auction coming up with four S780 combines all within the same range and it's in December, you're going to get a good buy because it's supply and demand. You know, like if there's an auction that's happening in December and then there's not a whole lot and it's an S780 combine, there's one on there, then that one's going to, there's lower supply and there's probably a few more buyers. You know, roughly the same amount of buyers. So that's, you really have to think about it from a supply and demand standpoint. The demand's always higher in December because they know where they're at financially for the most part, and they have tax consequences that they're trying to manage with these investments.
Yeah, no, it's great. And geez, here we go. Yeah, apparently, does anybody watch us on YouTube? I'm surprised that we had some decent numbers on these live streams, but it looks like Facebook is paying attention. What should buyers be watching for in listings that others might scroll past too quickly? I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. You know, you're not going to get rich or find a deal by just visually decoding or deciphering a listing. I'm not sure, you know, and again, like what I was alluding to is sometimes the poor quality listings, that's where you can sneak in and get a deal. You know, we bought a planter that was way too big for our operation, probably in 2020. And back to your 24 road talk we had, you know, one of the last times we did a live stream, you know, it was too big of a unit. But man, if you read that listing, you're like, oh, what is this thing? You know, but then again, you could go through it. Oh, well, God, it's got Delta Force. Oh, shoot, it's all precisioned out. I mean, they even have a scale on the CCS hopper. Oh, okay, they've got X, Y, or Z. And, you know, you can visually decipher what's going on with that unit. And that's really about one of the only advantages there is you can potentially know what you're bidding on without the listing properly or adequately describing it. And that's been my only situation.
Yeah, it's rare. It's rare that you can decipher from the public information on that listing that every other buyer has access to any sort of edge.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare. Like, you really have to hunt for crappy listings, and then everybody sees it's a crappy listing, and you know, there's no rocket science here. There's no secret sauce. It's if all you're looking at is the data on the web page that shows the listing, everybody's going to see what you think you're the only one that sees.
Right. Yeah.
Unless there's something in a picture that you might see and be like, oh, I see an oil leak right here.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be your saving grace.
You know, but it also goes to show what the strength of a good listing can do, you know, and quality images, all these little things that maybe not every auction house or individual listing agent's doing, you know, it may not benefit. And if you have a nice shop, for example, you know, and you've got that equipment shedded and you can see the other quality equipment that may not even be for sale, that visually is appealing. That's an attractive listing because it appears at least that that's coming from a quality operator, you know, or at least a well-to-do operator that probably keeps up on their service. But again, it's more so on the quality of the listings, you know, and I talk about this on, you know, being able to visually decipher. And really the only two major items that, you know, I, and honestly with my dad's checkbook at the time, one were planters. And that's because they were poor listings. And then, you know, something that happened on the planter that we currently use, it's a beautiful high-speed planter. I know the guy that owned it. I didn't realize that at the time. But the auction house had a crazy buyer's premium on it. And then the day of the auction, I reached out and I talked to the owner. Oh, it can't be that. Yeah, it is. It was a 10% no cap buyer's premium on auction time. So what happened? They reduced it because I think either is a mistake or he just called him out on it. Now it's a 1% buyer's premium. We already had our max bid logged in, and this is a great strategy. And I really shouldn't give this away because it's worked for me twice now. But honestly, you shoot your best bid maybe a day or two before, if it's like a proxy bid setup and you have that auto outbid situation. We don't do this on Tractor Tuesday. And this is the reason why, you know, in this example, I think I bid $145,000 because that I would have gladly paid that, or at least with my dad's checkbook at the time, for that planter. You know, the thing had stalled out at about 90,000 slowly, but surely. I think we won that auction at about 122, maybe 124,000. And about a year and a half later, somebody else I know in the industry said, oh, well, you got that one out of Aurora? And I was like, yeah. Well, I thought it was just the owner had a protection bid on it. Well, there you go. You shoot your best shot. And then it's like a psychological battle between sellers and buyers. You know, and it's, I wouldn't call it 4D chess, but, you know, it's just, it's an interesting thing with give and take. But that's the problem. People automatically assume the worst. Oh, I just keep getting outbid. I keep getting outbid. Oh, the owner's protecting it. Oh, the owner's got to be protecting it. No, some guy like me that would have gladly paid, you know, that 140 price point, got the thing for like 124. So I think it's a psychological battle too. And I mean, honestly, it's just mostly these auctioneers just need to step their game up and have better listings. I think everybody'd be a little bit happier.
So you don't have a max bid option on Tractor Tuesday?
No, not at all. Because of that, you know, just think about it. What, and I have a little bit of experience, don't need to get into it, you know, from some of my cryptography and other things that, let's say, I've been a part of allegedly, but the man in the middle is a major vulnerability. And I feel like with some of these auction houses, that gets compromised relatively easily. you know, just like your example, hey, I've got to get this out of it. Oh, well, we're not in the business of letting you fail. Okay, so what does that mean? You know, and if you have a max bid, isn't it ironic or amazing that in so many cases, oh, somebody had a max bid for 190 and then the bid stalled out at like 188, you know, and it's just, who's to say that it wasn't a real guy that had that max bid like me in my previous example, or potentially somebody working for that group with hundreds of employees that day, you know, sends a Snapchat to somebody else and says, hey, look, this is the max bid. You got to bid that thing up close. You'll get more money. I'll get a bigger commission. I'm not saying that's happening, but that's why we don't do it. You know, if you're at a land auction, you don't just raise your hand and say, oh, I'll pay $12,500 an acre, but I want you to outbid everybody from $7,500 up. No, we don't do that. You know, and it's just, if you're going to pledge or make a bid, in my opinion, stand on it, you know, and just live or die by your bid. And that's what we call straight bidding at Tractor Tuesday. So there is no vulnerability. There is no room for any sort of compromised information. You made your bid. It's public. It's more so like a land auction at Tractor Tuesday.
Yep. Yep. I hear you. No, that makes a lot of sense. You're just kind of concerned that that max bid figure will leak around to the, it can be abused.
Oh, for sure. Well, and here's another good question. And man, they love us on Facebook. True. But
it's a great question.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta wash, you know, if at all possible. I mean, it's okay if you're in season, you know, or if it's, but I mean, seriously, are you gonna go to prom
Buy something and then have to wash it right away?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody. Like that,
especially when it comes to vehicles, there's a lot of construction consignment auctions that I watch machinery on and vehicles. And I'm like, man, why wouldn't they vacuum? Like there's like dirt all over the running boards and everything. Like we detail. You can just tell if somebody's too lazy to wash it, they're probably too lazy to check the oil, change the oil, do all the other maintenance that needs to be done on an auction sale. And if the auctioneer isn't going to come out and wash it, then you have. You might get a good deal because there's plenty of buyers that don't want to buy dirty equipment.
Yeah.
So on the selling side, it's absolute stupidity not to clean your machine. But on the buying point, maybe you want to look for dirty machinery because there's plenty of buyers that don't want to buy something and they have to buy something dirty, you know? Right. So,
At least get the spitter off the floor, you know, and clear out the sunflower seeds. It just
blows my mind. Yeah, come on.
Oh man, it's just it's horrendous. I got a cat that died 8 years ago, still in the cab, haunting the damn thing. You know, and so it's just, clean up your equipment if you can. You know, and I was shocked. You know, we don't have a ton of shed space, but we did the uptime service program again at Titan last year, and our oldest tractor. I thought, God. You know, I see all these videos online and people getting the ceramic coating and all these things. I had to look into that on this tractor. And long story short, all they did was just wax, you know, one of our tractors that probably hadn't been waxed in, you know, almost a decade. Man, it brought that paint out. It looked phenomenal. And it really was minimal. And even if you don't get the repairs done, at least get a valid inspection, you know, and let a buyer know, like, hey, you know, I got a little leak here. For me to get to that seal, you know, it would have cost more than I'm going to blow on, you know, a lot of other things over the next 5 years I could have owned it. At least if a guy knows where the leak is, what's causing it, just paint the picture, clean it up, kick the spitter out the cab or whatever you got going on, you know, and it's, I kind of work as a producer where I'm not wearing big heavy boots. I got like a mini Dyson in my cab. And, you know, the first thing I want to do when I'm sweating my ass off is I want to kick my New Balances off. And, you know, just have nice socks on in the cab. So it's never a bad time to keep your stuff clean.
You're an owner operator though. A lot of guys like myself, we have South Africans or H2A workers that come in and they will destroy your equipment. Like I'll get in the machine that an H2A worker has been in and they'll just be empty trash everywhere, food on the ground. And I'm just like, clean your tractor or pack your bags, you know, like, come on, man. Like that's, you're in a $600,000-$700,000 tractor and you can't clean your stuff up. I'm like, that ain't gonna work. That ain't gonna fly here. You get out of the tractor, you grab some trash every time you get out of the tractor, like just be in the habit. But there's people that just don't think that way. You and I think that way. And I live in the tractor too, at certain times of the year, you know, like I have a video of me showing how you can make a, how you keep a toilet paper roll in the tractor. And it makes a really great pillow at 3 or 4 in the morning. If you need to quick get a 15 minute nap to keep from running into the telephone pole. But
yeah, when I have like a little airport style pillow, and it's just, it's amazing. My right bony elbow, you know, just sitting on the armrest, you know, and it's just, yeah, you get halfway through the harvest or even planting, and it's just, you know, you're getting like golfer's elbow from basically just sitting there bouncing up and down. But, you know, I don't have these signature cabs, and I just want everybody to know how amazing Scott's equipment is. You know, I mean, he's got massage seats. He's got little gnomes in there that probably massage his feet. I don't even understand how it all works with those signature cabs, but man, they're nice. And I'm just happy I've got suspended axles now. So that's all I'm working with. Here we go. Do you get a better deal if the tractor doesn't come with extra add-ons like GPS, or does it cost to add it yourself? There was a little bit of nuance here. I think when John Deere got rid of the Starfire, like the older ITC, and yeah, you can retrofit that, but there was such a shortage of 3,000 and 6,000 receivers where you would get quite the premium for the GPS equipment. I think at a minimum, if it's more of a factory monitor, at least leave the monitor in there. Don't let a guy just be blind and can't even fully functionally operate or run the machine. But as far as the receiver, I mean, if you got some special unlocks or you've got a real reason to keep it, it's not that big of a deal anymore. I mean, now, I mean, you can get an RTK antenna, get a 3,000, 6,000 receiver for, you know, very minimal. You know, Case IH and Trimble is even cheaper. Ag Leader, same thing. It's just, it's a dime a dozen. But if you really aren't going to keep the same make or, you know, that type of tractor around, you're not really saving a ton by holding back that GPS equipment. You know, and honestly, for me as a buyer, if it's the right type of setup, I mean, there's some convenience there. You know, I'm not going to trust your calibrations, but at least I know that, you know, I can basically go out the box with what you had set up. So me, I could go either way, but don't hold something back that's going to make it difficult for a guy. This is a Case IH tractor. Just give them the damn Pro 700 and let them run, man. It's not that you can buy one of those for $800. What are you trying to make a mess and yank wiring harnesses at? Come on, man. Just leave that in. If you got to keep the receiver, we all understand. And I think most guys are comfortable now. It's not that big of a deal. You can add your own GPS equipment. So yeah, don't necessarily feel married to it. But you know, some of these auction houses, I mean, they want to strip the wheel weights, the you know, suitcase weights. It's like, oh, everything's an auction lot. Well, yeah, but come on, man, that's kind of tacky. Just let her go.
Well, in my experience, I've auctioned and sold equipment with the, like, you know, just if you have a combine and you're doing the corner post mount, that's like a $500 bracket.
Yeah.
And you have to get it at John Deere. You're not going to find a $500 bracket at, on an auction, just the bracket. You know, it might come with the combine, it might not. So, if you're selling machinery, strip it down because you're not going to get your money out of that if you can recycle it. But don't take it just to try and sell it on eBay or Facebook and give yourself.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything out. Yeah, it's just it's
take it again. Take it off for the listing, and then if you have a buyer, if this is retail, this isn't an auction, like where you actually can negotiate price. Then you can say, hey, I can throw in the external monitor for the combine or the tractor or the monitor or the globe. I've sold plenty of equipment with GPS stuff because it's cheap on auction. I mean, you can get a Starfire 600 for around $2,000 on an auction, where if you bought it from Deere, you know, which the 600 is the dated model now, the 700 is coming out, and all the new machinery, it's built in. So you're not taking any of the GPS stuff with you no matter what. But when it comes to external monitors and all that stuff, use it to make a retail sale. Don't take pictures with it in there, but you could offer it. You say, hey, have external monitors or have controllers, you know, available for addition. And you could throw that in to get the sale. That way you don't have to, you don't have to drop the price to get the sale or throw in shipping. Like it's a sales tactic. But if from a buyer standpoint, if you're buying stuff on auction and they're foolish enough to leave it in there, take it. It's free, right? It's basically free.
Yeah. And it's, and I disagree a little bit on the auction side, unless, you know, a guy's got a use for it, you know, and then it's just, and explain it all, because there's, it can be a little bit more nuanced there. You know, there's radar, there's a monitor, there's several different things. There's a lot of different unlocks. And, you know, outside of my part of Nebraska, some guys don't even know what their activations are, you know, and it's just, it's very common in your RTK in my neck of the woods.
Sure. But that's an expensive unlock though. You know, if you can take that off and put it in your new tractor and save yourself that money, you're never going to get that out of selling it. You're never going to get the true cost that you put in that out of selling it. So if you can repurpose that monitor and use it on your upgraded machine, I would take it out. But you know, if you can get a machine with great unlocks, you just put money in your pocket, you know, on the buying side. Mm-hmm.
But also it depends on the crowd within that auction, you know, that could, you know, to just be a contrarian here, that could be the benefit of, oh, hey, I'm going to bid on this one because it's actually got what I want, you know? And so if it depends on how packed the house is, I mean, it's just, you know, you never know. I mean, an agronomist can tell you, oh, you should bump your population down here because it doesn't perform as well. But you could also say, well, God, maybe I had to beef it up a little bit so I get a little bit better of a stand. So you could go either direction. And if anybody is too rigid, I mean, just be open to be flexible. I think, you know, given what's going to be slated on an auction, hopefully you can defer to the auctioneer that you're, you know, paying so pretty to click a mouse. But on Tractor Tuesday, you know, you can ask us questions, you know, and we can help you make that decision because, it can really vary from region to region or even unit to unit. Here's another one. Is it worth it to look for auction deals a long distance away, even though transport will cost more? What areas might have better prices? And I guess, you know, the context here, better prices could be, you know, maybe it's a potato digger out of Idaho. You know, I mean, it's just, you'll see those deers and those case tractors and, you know, I wouldn't buy one personally, but, you know, potentially you can get a better deal farther west and then probably farther south. And, you know, if you're in the corn belt, the plain states, you know, some of these parts here, in theory, you should get a better value, meaning a higher bid for your unit in the middle of the map. And logistics, yeah, they're not cheap, but there's enough backhauls. And if you're not in a rush, you know, it's not that big of a deal to buy something out of state. It really has gotten a lot easier. You know, we're lucky. We're about 25 minutes south of the Case New Holland Combine plant. So almost every Case IH dealer is sending trucks this way. And I mean, yeah, they're going to come down and pick up a semi. Well, maybe they can just drop off a tractor when they're on their way. But what do you think about buying units out of state, Scott?
I would say almost 100% of everything I buy is 300-400 miles or greater away from me personally. And the same with the sales side. You know, I'm selling stuff in Canada, New Mexico, Texas. We're in the process of shipping a tractor to Texas right now. It's a 6175M. So it's a tractor you could technically haul on a you know, on a gooseneck trailer behind a pickup. I'm getting bids for $1,800 to go from Minnesota to Texas. $1,800. Wow. Like it's a few bucks a mile. It's so cheap. And soon we're going to have a guest on here who's in the trucking business and he's going to we're going to talk about trucking quite a bit because trucking transport. I just had a transport guy call me today. I have transport people calling me all the time just saying, "Hey, you got a load, you know, like we're really slow. Our prices are coming down." It used to be $8 or $9 a mile to ship on an RGN detached trailer. Now it's like $4 a mile, $4.50 a mile, $5 a mile. It's just, it's almost half or some places less than half to haul a piece of machinery. So yes, if you can steal it from New York City because they don't need a X9-1100 in New York City, do it and ship it to Iowa or where Nebraska or, you know, Kansas, wherever you're farming, Canada. Can't look outside the country, including Canada. I bought plenty of stuff in Canada and sold plenty of stuff in Canada. But one caveat, when you're buying outside your market, especially if it's like Canada and northern states, don't buy an X9-1100 if you're a corn bean guy from Canada, because it's going to be set up with a fixed speed drive. mm-hmm. and it's going to have the wrong concaves. It's going to have the wrong chaffer and sieve. Like mm-hmm. you're going to regret doing that. But, you know, so know your machine. Don't buy a combine, an X9 1000 from Canada. Think you saved, you know, $100,000. Then you get it here mm-hmm. and you got to put $100,000 into it. Yeah. Or you can't. Like once it's a fixed speed feeder house, it doesn't have a variable speed feeder house. Like it's done. It's not possible to put a variable speed feeder house on a fixed speed feeder house combine that's designed for small grains, you know? So yeah, you can definitely find great deals outside your market, and you should be looking anywhere. Just forget about, don't even look at the location until you're really close to buying it. And then you can, there's all sorts of online brokers like Veritrend. That's what I'm right now on, Veritrend. Yeah.
Okay.
You can put it out there, and within a few minutes, you'll get 8 to 10 bids,
you know,
from pickup to drop off. If you've got flexibility and you're willing to wait for somebody to get a backhaul, then you're going to ship it even cheaper. Forget about shipping is not a big cost unless you're shipping things that are low dollar amounts, right?
Right. Like right.
You want to ship a dirt bike 4,000 miles. Mm-hmm. This makes no sense, you know,
right?
Because you're going to add 25% of the cost of the dirt bike just in shipping, or a four wheeler.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another one. And apparently these actually aren't coming. Most of them at least aren't coming from Facebook. Apparently whatever we're doing from YouTube, it's not playing on the screen, or at least with that icon. But we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but how do tax considerations actually influence year end pricing? If at all, again, it's just so variable, you know, and speaking of variable, I hate our variable speed feeder house on our 70 series. I just want to put a fixed speed on that because all we're doing is picking irrigated corn. We don't cut beans with it, but you know, again, yeah, I mean, some of these end of the year deals, you know, on a good year, if we could have all gotten a 5 in front of our corn, you know, I think you would have seen stronger sales, obviously. I think the truth of it is this, you know, I hate to say bailout, but you know, whoop-de-doo, what's that really going to be? Is it going to be about $50 an acre? You know, I'd like to really, I'll take it, you know, but it's going to be probably crop specific. I don't even think it's a band-aid at this point. You know, I think it's basically all it's going to be is just kind of a wet piece of tissue when you're hemorrhaging out on the floor. You know, if anything, it's probably going to do with that, you know, being explained, you're probably just going to get an infection and do even worse the next year, you know, and that's what I'm afraid of. So I just, on a strong year, you know, if there's certain markets that received more, you know, yeah, it drives the prices up. It's almost, you know, it's a no brainer to answer that. But a year like this, it's really got to be a special unit. And I think a guy will wait, you know, for a December 30th auction if it's a special unit, you know, and if it makes sense, they're going to go for it. And if they don't get it, first thing they're going to do when they miss out on that auction, they're going to call the co-op and say, hey, you know, what's MAP right now? You know, let me just book some acres and problem solved. So yeah, it just, you know, kind of a repetitive question there. And most guys know this. There's no mystery meat. We're not going to give you the tools that are going to change your life and make you a better bidder on auction. But you know, on most of these platforms, I believe in it. Shoot your shot and shoot it early, you know, and then turn your brain off. You don't get emotionally attached to that item. And I think that psychological battle is really a lot of what drives the price up. I mean, I've seen so many units that just, you know, went to, here we go. More specific, are the psychological tactics to intimidate other bidders to drop out? I heard Zach mention jump bids in an interview. Well, and I've been yapping about it for half of this show too. But I mean, yeah, I think it is kind of it's a tactic, if you will. And it's just, you know, give the illusion. If they're not showing a bidder number in the stream, you know, on what's going on, yeah, just do that big jump bid. You know, you auto outbid. It is a tactic. And, you know, for me, yeah, we're 2 for 2 using it. So it's a way in theory to scare people off, because anytime I've missed out on an item, I automatically, and it's so dumb that I even think this way, I'm in the business, you know, in theory, and it's just, oh, somebody's protecting it. Well, they probably aren't, you know, you just, some guy like me shot his shot and he's going to walk away, because then when the dust settles, if you won the item, yeah, great. You got it for a price that you were willing to pay. If you don't, you knew where you needed to keep your purse at, you know, and if it went over your limit, yeah, you missed out. There's another deal down the road.
Yeah. But the question before this, you're always going to pay a premium during tax management season. It's just a given. Some years it might be a 10 or 20% premium on a really good year, but some years you're going to pay a 5% premium. This year is probably a 10% premium buying machinery on auction or even retail December, January, March. There's a season for sales. And if you're buying in the sales season, you're going to pay a premium. This last question, of course, there's an auction strategy. Not everybody has time to sit in front of a computer or phone all day. So if you wait till the last 10 seconds of the bid and you put your bid on, and it resets the clock for 4 minutes, and you keep doing that for hours and hours and hours, yeah, you're gonna drive buyers away from that sale. They're gonna give up, like 100%.
And that's a great point. And honestly, that was another reason behind our straight bid system, was because it's ridiculous. And it happened to me when I used one of these previous groups when I used to auction equipment, you know, through these groups I'd license. I remember it was like a 7230R, nice little, you know, medium frame, you know, higher horsepower tractor. It's at 101,000. There's 1 minute left. The owner of that estate calls me. It's like, Zach, you know, my brother and sister, everybody, we got to get some more bids on this. I said, look, it never fails. This last minute, it's going to go up 20 to 30%. Well, what happened? That last minute took over 40 minutes. Yeah. I think that tractor brought 140 grand. But, you know, literally my wife's family is an hour away. We're leaving the farm. We're going to my in-laws for Christmas or something, end of the year type of an auction. And by the time we were about ready to pull into her little town, the auction finally ended. You know, and it's exhausting. So, and that's why we, another reason why we do the straight bid, we want that last minute to maybe get extended about 5 to 8 minutes. And that's about the average on Tractor Tuesday. You're not going to sit around for an hour and a half, $100 a time, you know, watching this clock get extended. It's ridiculous. And I'm surprised, in my opinion, it's ridiculous. I'm surprised more auction groups haven't changed it. But again, they're trying to get more bids. And I guess that's one way to do it.
They're tying equipment together too. They're linking equipment. So if there's like that, back to the example with like 4S780s on there, if there's 4S780s, even S790s, next nines, they're going to link all those. If one machine gets a bid, it's going to reset the timer on every single one of those machines. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of getting, they're getting better. But the worst thing in the world is when you really want to buy something, and there's a few different techniques you can do. You can either, when somebody outbids you, bid it right back up, like instantly. And they're like, oh, there's a bot bidding on it, or there's a somebody with a high minimum and that can drive them out. Like, I've actually done that on live auctions with farmland. It's just like the guy's like, yep. And then I'm like, yep. And then eventually they just quit and you got it. So you can bid. There's a lot of different strategies. It's just like playing poker. When you're bidding on your phone or your computer, it's almost like playing poker. You're trying to get into the head of the opposing bidder. Hopefully it's a person just like you. It's not a robot. Right. Eventually it'll probably all be AI, you know, like we'll be bidding against AI bots that some large corporate farmers set up, and they're like, you know what, we're tired of buying at our local dealer. We're just going to buy 80 machines, and here's the parameters, and there'll be a bot bidding it to a certain number. And then if they don't get that number, it'll be done. If they don't have a pre-existing, you know, bid there. But yes, there's definitely a lot of different bidding techniques you can use to try and psych out your opponent. But at the other time, it's just for entertainment purposes, really. I mean, you don't know. You don't know the other bidder. Live auctions used to be a lot different, you know, because you could look the other guy in the eye and be like, what's his breaking point? But online, it's just a game you play with yourself, and you can wait till the last second and keep bidding and try and drive them nuts, or you can try and make them think it's a bot, and then they're like, screw this, and walk away. There's a lot of different techniques you can do.
No, that's great. And really, we could have probably called this episode the psychology of online auctions. Because half these people are going to need a therapist after this year's up. But, you know, I'll be watching. I'm hoping, you know, at least throw a few bids out there. Am I a serious buyer on anything? I mean, it's yet to be determined. I really don't need anything. I mean, honestly, if you had some mules and, you know, kind of a drag or pull type planter, I could hook up, I could get my acres covered. And, you know, so I really don't need anything, but I'm interested to see, because I'm not a gambling man. I bet, you know, enough in real life, I don't have time to gamble, but I would assume that the auctions leading up to the middle of the month, maybe ending tomorrow, I think those are going to be the peak of the year. And I've seen it in years past, similar years. I guess it could have been like 2021. And I had auctions the first week, second, third, and then the very end of the year in December. And the early to mid-December auctions performed better. The end of the year, and I had a beautiful case study for this. I don't know, I can't remember if there were 9510 RTs, 9560 RTs, great operator from Nebraska here. He had three of them. So we split them up on three different dates, and that's just, and they were all within the same hour range, you know, almost identical, great listings, perfect service records. All the pips were done. I think that series, maybe there was like a head gasket issue or something. Everything had been handled. And the later in the month that we had those same units, the less the final bids were. And that's my assumption. That's what I think is going to happen. Do I know anything? I mean, ask my accountant, obviously not. So, you know, here we are, but we'll see what's going to happen. But is there any other questions? I'll check with our producer, Kyle. I can't see the YouTube or the Facebook or any of that stuff. But I mean, to me, it'd be a great place to wrap it. I want to get home. It's after 5 o'clock. My kids are running around. It looks a little hazy outside. I don't know what's going on in Hastings. So yeah, no more questions. Scott, do you have any final thoughts on what we've discussed today?
No, just, you know, if you're going to buy sight unseen, everything I buy almost is sight unseen. You just got to you got to make some phone calls. You got to do your due diligence, set your financing up before you buy it. Otherwise, you're going to be struggling with your operating line on this equipment, because there's plenty of guys that are getting denied right now with financing, whether it's Ag Direct or wherever. Yeah. Set up your financing in front. You know, even if you don't buy it, it's just due diligence you got to do. The more due diligence and the more time you put into buying, the better buyer you'll be, just period.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great advice. And yeah, just be organized, be prepared, dig into it, do your research, and maybe come up with a strategy. If you know you have to buy something by, you know, the 1st of March, a lot of producers turn their brains off after March 1st. And honestly, if you've got equipment to sell, primarily planters, row crop tractors, get them listed. And if you can't sell them in January, auction those things off in February. But that's just kind of my idea with it. We've got some big dates with Tractor Tuesday. I'm being told here we need to hang on for 2 more minutes if we can. Here we go. He's posting some dates of our auctions that we have at Tractor Tuesday. I'm not sure how January 20th is going to fill. We've got two different dealers in particular that are looking at doing some inventory reductions. But again, I really want as much time as we can to promote. And then actually, I've got my third baby coming right in the middle of January too. So I guess we'll see how that all happens. But I may not be present for our January 20th auction if we have enough units to justify doing that date. But yeah, just be realistic. And if you don't want to go to auction because of the volatility, you feel like you've got a nice unit that you know how to price, and put it on daily deals at Tractor Tuesday. We're literally not charging anything. And I think we had 7 or 8 units that sold last week. And again, it's just those nice units that may have been pre-def. You know, we had a 6140M here in town. The guy had a price for $99,500 and it had 1600 hours on it. One owner, beautiful loader bucket. It looked like he'd never even picked up a pillow in that loader. And here it is, it's sitting there. And it was just the perfect machine. And I said, "Guy, we could probably get more aggressive." And he said, "Zach, I just want to get the thing sold." What happened? Within 4 days, maybe ask one of my guys, but definitely within a week of that listing going live, it sold. And you're seeing that. If things are priced correctly, there's still buyers out there. And a lot of folks love going to Tractor Tuesday because you're not getting hit up with women's clothing. You're not getting shown, you know, things that aren't related, you know, within that marketplace. And we've got some really slick filtering tools. You can see all that great stuff at Tractor Tuesday. But regardless of where you buy or sell, educate yourself, take your time, dig into it. And that's really all I've got to say. Do your due diligence, be patient, never rush. There is no fear of missing out, because what are you going to miss out on? Be like my dad. Be the second to last bidder. You don't have to pay for it. Scott, I appreciate you showing up, man. Thanks for your time, and look forward to some of the other interviews we have this week. I know we've got a big one tomorrow, and then we've got another big one Friday. And then we've got a huge, I mean, borderline, I don't even want to tease it too much in case he ghosts me, but we've got some really cool people that are coming on the show. You could call them friends, you could call them extended family, but they're all part of the Tractor Tuesday family, and we're looking forward to it. And if you haven't done it, I don't do this that often. I'm not on YouTube like that, but it really does help us out if you click like, if you subscribe to our channel, you can get some notifications whenever we go live. If I don't irritate the heck out of you, we'll see you next time at Tractor Tuesday Live. And for Scott Anderson, I'm Zach Bosley. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions, leave them below, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Well, it's not far to my grandpa's. At least it's not for me.